You're listening to What Were You Thinking with Eric McCoy and Morella McCoy, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Eric McCoy. Probably put the mics on, right?
Yeah.
And you are listening to LA Talk Radio, What Were You Thinking? And I am here with my beautiful wife.
Hello, hello, everyone.
So, you know, this last week's been kind of crazy. And I started a new podcast with Lana Curie that's called Walk a Mile in My Shoes. And one of the things that we've really been contemplating is the devastation behind belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, two of the greatest belief systems that we have out there or types of belief system is religion and politics. Of course, this sort of shapes...
My favorite topic.
Yeah, shapes the world. You know, you even look at the political realm of things. You know, it was always what, you know, red versus blue. But in technicality, it's actually, you know, like a fixed versus a fluid.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I've learned in life to really work on not caring what other people think.
Right.
Right. Which is sort of a long topic that we'd gotten into on our ride down here.
Right.
and not caring about, you know, being stuck with other people's belief systems. You know, religion has sort of been a big topic that Lana and I have been talking about. I thought so hard on this, you know, like, how do I believe, right, what is said in a religion when it's fallible human beings, right, that lack a godly mind,
mm-hmm.
right, in telling me what God's intentions, motives, and full plan is?
Right.
Right. And so we wanted to actually discuss this a little bit today, and it's sort of based a little bit on the premise of Abraham Maslow and Maslow's hierarchy of needs and the peak of his pyramid being self-actualization, what self-actualizers are. But I wanted to start real quick, and I wanted to tell a quick story. And for those people out there, you know, especially that are maybe struggling with substance abuse, mental health, or anything, you know, that you may be dealing with, right? My favorite saying, and the thing I say all the time, is no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been or what you've done, you can do anything you want if you're willing to fight for it.
Right.
And I wanted to tell a quick story on this, and then we're going to talk about some of these topics that we want to discuss. But many years ago, and it is actually at the point in time where I met my beautiful wife, Morella, I owned a treatment program in Anaheim. And when I started this program, I was sort of a business partner. I was the brain. The other guy was the money.
Right.
I didn't have the funding myself. And so we started this program, and we wanted to do alternative sentencing. And I had a battle, and I had an uphill battle in being able to accomplish the goal that I wanted to achieve. And one of the greatest parts of that uphill battle I was dealing with was my criminal past. I'm a 6-time convicted felon.
And you are?
I didn't tell you.
No.
and so I was working to try to figure out how am I going to do this. And I didn't really have all the straight ideas of what I was going to be able to do. And so I literally just went, you know, walking and started going through the courts and meeting judges. And I had about 30% of the judges that actually met with me, which was kind of cool.
It was sort of a unique
experience being able to sit in the other side in the judge's chambers even sometimes.
For a good reason, right?
For a good reason. and then I worked to get clearance. And this was the bigger part, was I wanted to get clearance to get into the jails. And this was the very department that had offered me and given me those 6 felonies.
Right.
that I was facing and dealing with. And so that was a battle. And I would put in a request to get clearance denied, put a request to get clearance denied, right? And I kept working at it,
working at it.
No matter where you've been or what you've done, you can do anything you want if you're willing to fight for it.
And that means persistence.
100%. And through that persistence, eventually, They gave me the keys. No, not really the keys, but
they finally said, "You know what? Get this guy off my ass,
right? Yeah,
and let's just give him the clearance, yeah." Right?
And they actually gave me attorney clearance. It was the coolest thing. I literally had the same clearance that attorneys had,
right?
And so, at some point in time during this process, I was literally able to, you know, go into the courts. I'd be able to talk to the people in the cage, you know, be able to stand up there, go back in the judge's chambers, and argue with the district attorney, you know, on why this person, we want to get this person a program. I actually also became friends with the very district attorney that was trying to send me to prison for 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, how cool is that, huh?
That was pretty neat.
And so I used to kind of fuck with him about that.
Right. You can always turn your life around, right?
So. Absolutely. And so the reason I bring this up, right, is that for me in my life, right, and it is one of the last things that we were actually talking about on here, but it's about really, really enjoying the journey, mm-hmm, and not just the destination.
Right. Because once you get to that destination, now what?
Yeah.
Right.
But then you set new goals and stuff.
Right.
You know, but it's that opportunity to enjoy what you have done, the work you're doing, to be proud of your accomplishments. You know, everybody in the recovery community always says pride is a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with being proud of what you have done.
Right.
They're talking about a different kind of pride.
Yeah, it's a different kind of pride. Yeah. But yeah, you have to be proud of what you've done in your life. And if you look back and start to think about everything that you've overcome, you deserve that pat on the back. And it doesn't need to come from anybody else. It comes from you, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the concept of self-esteem. So Abraham Maslow, right, his pyramid, you know, the idea of, you know, Abraham Maslow's was you would start at the very bottom of the pyramid, and you'd have to work your way up, right? And so you had to fulfill the lowest level to step up to the next one. And so physiological needs were at the lowest, you know, food, water, your basic necessities of life, safety needs, love and belongingness, right? In terms of a family, feeling that you actually belong to the family, that you're loved by the family, and then esteem needs, right? And the esteem was, he talked about too, esteem from others and self-esteem.
Right.
When you get that higher level of self-esteem, you don't need the pat on other
from other people. Right.
Right. And so you have the opportunity, you can actually do that yourself.
Right. So we were talking about how do you get there, right? How do you get to the point where you no longer need the approval from others? Obviously, when you're a child, right, growing up, you kind of need that approval from your friends. First, it's your family, but then it's your friends, right? And so you try to fit into this little circle of friends, mm-hmm, that you find yourself with, and so you start to try to fit in, right? But as you become an adult and you start living all these different life experiences, when do you go, okay, I'm not doing this to please others. I'm doing this to please myself, right?
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of times people don't move past the approval of others, and so they don't know how to prove who they are without that approval of others.
And I think part of it has to do with your belief system, which we were talking about, right? We were talking about, you know, and I encourage everybody out there that's listening to really consider this, you know, what is your belief system? You know, you were taught by parents, caregivers, you know, teachers, peers, you know, whoever was that, you know, was passing information on to you when you were a young kid. How much of that information is accurate? You know, how much of that information is within realism or realistic life?
Right. And you can actually use that in the instance of if one of your children or your child becomes addicted to drugs, right? Mm-hmm. Most parents will blame themselves. What did I do wrong, right? Because you have been taught this belief system that if you are not a good parent, your child will stray,
mm-hmm,
and do things, you know, that are, you know, so of course most parents are going to fault themselves as far as saying, I must have done something wrong, right?
Absolutely.
And instead of admitting to yourself as a parent that this child has their choices and they've made their choices regardless of what I did.
Absolutely.
Right. So that's one of the aspects. So when we're talking belief systems, we're not just talking religion and politics. We're talking about things that you were taught as you grew from, like Eric said, you know, caregivers, teachers, other friends, you know, things of that nature. But is that really the truth? Mm-hmm. And so you've got to be able to kind of distinguish what is really truthful and what do you believe? Mm-hmm. So, and that was some of the soul searching I did, right, with Alex was, you know, at first it was total blame. What did I do wrong? Why doesn't he love me? What, you know, I did everything I could for him, blah, 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 blah. Until, you know, that realization came. And of course you helped me a lot with that too, was really kind of understanding that he made this choice on his own, didn't think about how it affected anybody else around him. This was the choice that he wanted to make, whether it be right or wrong, or, you know, whatever our belief was, right? It was his choice. And once I was able to accept that, I was able to start healing.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of what we're talking about when it comes to belief systems.
Absolutely. And beliefs are difficult to change.
They are, absolutely.
You know, especially if you were, you know, I mean, typically as kids, when we're growing up, you know, we'll be told things and we just accept them. I mean, the child's mind is just, you know, I take in what I'm being told. I trust these people. It's my parents. I love them more than anything. So what they're telling me must be real.
Yeah, they're your teachers, yeah.
But is it, you know? I mean, and this is one of the worst things about when you look at, you know, all of the dysfunction that gets passed on through families.
Right.
Hatred, racism, you know, crazy religious belief systems.
Right.
You know? And so the question being is, how do you change those beliefs? And they're not easy to change, right?
They're not, no.
Your mind does not know the difference between what you tell it and things that you experience, which is also why you can lie to yourself over and over again and start to believe your own lies.
Right.
Right. And, but the premise, and I'll just kind of say this real quick, and everybody, a lot of people have heard of this, and some people have practiced this, but positive affirmations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Positive affirmations are, if anybody remembers those old Saturday Night Live episodes,
yeah.
You know, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough,
and gosh darn it,
people
like me.
Sort of corny, but, you know, it's
but
sort
it
of,
true.
It's sort of based on the premise of advertising. And I always kind of teach it to people in the sense of advertising. So if anybody out there works within advertisers, what do? Well, you come up with sayings, slogans, songs. You know, you think about a product and this damn song gets stuck in your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are relentless. They're consistent over and over and over. And it just becomes a part of us.
Right.
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 And what are they doing? They're appealing to your emotions,
mm-hmm.
right? And so an emotion is defined as a neurological impulse that pushes me to act upon something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and technically what they're trying to do is get you to get up off your ass and go buy whatever it is that they're trying to
right,
sell you.
Right.
And so this is the premise of what positive affirmations are, right? And this is something I worked on tremendously because I held belief systems. I'm useless. I'm never going to amount to nothing. I'm a piece of shit, right? I mean, I held these belief systems when I was early in recovery back in, you know, early 2000s, and they were not in my best interest. Obviously, they were not going to work well for me.
Right.
And so, you know, I started working on this, you know, and positive affirmations have a few requirements. One is you start them with I statements. They have to be positive, so you don't want to ever say, I am not something,
mm-hmm.
because your mind will just focus on what you're not. And they have to be written and as if they are already currently happening at this moment in time. So it's already happening, you know. I am confident in my ability to get a job. I am confident in my ability to stay clean and sober, you know. So you come up with these affirmations, and then you've got to advertise, right? You've got to say them to yourself over and over and over and over. Wake up in the morning, you go in front of the mirror in the bathroom, shut the door. You say it out loud, confidently. If people hear you, they're going to think you're crazy. But who cares, right?
Now, what do you do when the negative voice is louder than the positive?
You got to catch it.
Right.
You've got to catch it, you know. And what happens with these admins? Up in the morning, do it. Do it at 10 o'clock. Do it at 1 o'clock. Do it at 5 o'clock. And the most important time is just before you go to bed because that'll help sink it into your subconscious.
Right.
If you do that for like 3 months, 4 months, every day, six times a day, you will start to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to sink in there.
Right.
And you'll start disputing those belief systems that have been tearing you down and holding you back.
Right, right.
And so, I mean, I think, you know, again, our belief systems are one of the greatest things that can give us success in life, but it can also be the greatest way that you can destroy your life.
Right. And take away your happiness, right? I know that in my life, I have struggled with that quite a bit in different aspects, right? Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, I talk about motherhood a lot and, you know, was I a good enough mother? Did I do everything I was supposed to? You know, I had a husband who was just as much as a child than mm-hmm. my own children, if not more. And so whenever they failed, it was because of, you know, because I decided to marry this father figure who just wasn't really teaching them the way to be men. And I don't know how to teach them boys how to be men. Right. So anytime, you know, it's one of those things. So it was constantly in my head and this constant worry, am I doing a good enough job? Am I doing this right? Did I screw them up? And, you know, those kind of things. And so now that I'm older and a little more wiser and my kids are, you know, doing well, I'm able to go, I did do a good job. My mm-hmm. kids are happy. And so it's that constant reminder. And so when I now have a 16-year-old at home and he goes through these emotional roller coasters, for those of you who think that only girls go through emotional roller coasters, believe me, boys do too. you know, so when he's going through his roller coaster.
There's male periods.
Oh, so. My God. Don't even get me started. But there is that when he's going through things, I am able to remind myself, this is his, what he's going through. I will be there to help him get through whatever he needs to get through. But this is not because I failed.
Mm-hmm.
He's going through whatever emotional roller coaster he's going through at that moment or whatever. It's not a sense of failure anymore. And that is because I have told myself my kids are where they're at because I worked my butt off to get them there. And although I may not have done everything perfect, know what parent is, I did well enough that my kids are happy in their life. And that's basically what I wanted them for them in the first place. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it takes discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It takes discipline to in the morning, anytime that creepy thought comes into your head, to remind yourself, nope, I'm not going to let that in. I'm going to speak positively about myself,
mm-hmm.
You know, go to bed, think positive. So it does take discipline and you have to say it to where you start to believe it, mm. right? It's consistent. Consistency is always the key, right? And everything, right? In dieting, in exercising, in, you know, going to school and doing your job, you want to stay consistent in everything you do. So why not give that consistency to give yourself that self-esteem, that love that you should have for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just as important as your children, as your spouse, as your job. You're actually more important because without you having a strong self-esteem, then everything else kind of struggles.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's kind of on that premise that, I mean, if you hate yourself, how are you really going to love other people?
Right.
And, you know, and like people can act as if they do, mm-hmm. they can act that way, but it's not genuine.
Right. And I think we talked about this too, right? So I know for a fact growing up, to me, I acted like my shit didn't stink.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was it. I loved myself. It was perfect. But behind closed doors, I was suffering. I hated who I was. I hated how I looked. I hated, I mean, I was so hard on myself. And there's still times now that I have to catch myself and pull myself in. You know, losing weight. If I haven't met my goal, you know, or whatever, I get hard on myself, even though I know that I've been working my butt off, mm-hmm. you know, and I find myself going, well, this person didn't compliment me on how much I've lost, you know, in the last year and a half, 2 years. And so if they don't compliment me, then they must not see it. Therefore, I'm not working hard enough. And that's such a negative way of thinking. And I know better. And so I have to remind myself to bring it in and say, no, I like the way I look. I know I'm working hard. Yeah, I haven't met my goal yet, but I'm still working towards it, right? So I have to constantly remind myself. So just because we're saying, like, this is what you have to do, doesn't mean that us, we don't struggle at times too, when we, maybe not Eric, he's kind of a sociopath, but, you know, it doesn't mean that we don't have to remind ourselves of that.
I am not a true sociopath.
No, not for
reals. I used to be.
Oh.
Back when I was on drugs, I was definitely probably defined that way.
Right.
I was self-diagnosed. You know.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Antisocial personality disorder.
Right. Yeah, you're really antisocial for sure. But, you know, those are some of the things that, and that's what Eric and I were talking about when we were talking about what we were going to talk about today, is really talking about, people are always like, this is what you have to, this, you need to love yourself. You need to, you know, appreciate yourself. You need to do this. Yeah. You need to do that.
But how, but do, you
how
do,
do,
it?
Do you do
yeah,
it?
Absolutely.
So that's one of the first steps, is the positive affirmation.
Absolutely. You got to change your belief system. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you've got to, and that's the hard part. I mean, you literally do. You have to get everybody else out of your head, because mm-hmm. that's typically what you're doing is, you know, like we were talking, like racism, for instance, you know. Like if you grew up in a very racist family and, you know, your parents taught you certain things and that's just what you believe. But is that really what you believe?
Right.
Like truly what you believe, you know, and which makes sense. You know, I was talking about this when Paxton was with me. We were talking a little bit about racism and stuff. And, you know, and the problem with, you know, the concept of racism is typically, yes, if you're taught that over and over and over and over as a kid, it makes sense that you're going to be racist.
Right.
Naturally. Right. Right. But it doesn't have to always be that way, because right. you can change. And I told the story of that client that I had, you know, that I all of a sudden had, you know, he was a white supremacist, right? And then I had a black therapist, which was initially not very accepted by him, but again, I just told him to sit in group. All I want you to do is listen, you know. And then all of a sudden, he comes after group. He's like, "Okay, it wasn't that bad," you know. After like 2 months or 3 months or something of him being in group, he wanted him as his therapist,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the only solution I came up with, the answer came up with to the reason why this guy would be able to do this, was a belief that he held as black people are stupid, which is typically is what he was taught, that all of a sudden the therapist he had was brilliant.
Right.
Was, I mean, this
he
guy.
Opened up his mind. Right.
So all of a sudden he caught a lie, mm-hmm. you know, that he was told something that, wait a minute, no, this isn't actually true.
Right.
You know, and even if it was just one person, but that whole thing breaks down.
Right.
You know, and the guy, it was amazing. I mean, the guy, you know, he was his therapist, and they worked fantastic. And the guy's, as far as I know, is still doing fantastic today. You know, he was able to get out of prison in his head. You know,
right.
He spent half his life in prison too. You know,
right.
with a father, growing up with a father who was a member of the KKK. He
right.
was like a grand poobah of the KKK.
Oh yeah. Well, and the same goes with like women, right? So women who have been hurt by men in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless if it was in a relationship or they were, you know, molested or raped or anything like that, they were hurt by men. So they go into these new relationships with this baggage of this, all men are the same,
mm-hmm.
right? So all men are going to break my heart. They're all, so you go into a relationship already not trusting fully in the person, because you already have been, you're in this belief system that all men are bad.
Right.
And for women too, right? There's men that
sure.
that don't want to get in a relationship.
And that is so unfair.
It is. It's mm-hmm. not fair to blame the new person for stuff that's happened in the past. If you were damaged by a relationship, you need to heal from that first before you can really open your heart and mind to a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's one of those things where it's not necessarily just stuff that you were taught growing up, but it's also from life experiences.
Right.
So life experiences do not make the next experience the same. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever happened to you before doesn't mean that the new is going to happen again, and that you need to find that new person guilty.
right.
for whatever right. was done to you before in the past, right? And that, again, is another, I had a completely different understanding about men growing up after talking, we've talked about the stuff that happened to me growing up. I didn't trust men. I thought all men only wanted sex, that was all they wanted. And that I was just a thing. I wasn't a person. I wasn't, I wasn't allowed to have my own opinions or my own thoughts, because of the way that, men were introduced into my life kind of scenario. And so having to go from one, pretty crappy relationship for 20 years and then to a new relationship, I had to know and understand that if I was going to go into this new relationship, that I couldn't bring in the baggage that the previous relationship had given me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not caring what people think about you.
Right.
This was something we actually had a very in-depth conversation with on our way down here.
Right.
Was this concept of, and I have moved this way in life, is that I really don't care what people think about me, and I don't think of it in a negative light, because, if you're looking at it from Abraham Maslow's, premise of self-actualized people or self-actualization, these are people that respect people. They treat people nicely. I mean, so it's not like we're harming people and not caring what they think. That's not the reality behind it, hatred, and I was kind of asking this before we started, hatred, can you truly have genuine hate and have love in the equation?
Right.
And I don't know if you can.
I don't know if you can.
We can always say that there's no such thing as love without hate and vice versa, mm-hmm. because there's nothing to correlate them to,
right.
Or compare them to. But for people out there that I see as genuinely hateful individuals, I can't imagine that there's love with, like a true genuine love that can come out of them.
Well, like the saying says, if you don't love yourself, how can you love somebody else, yeah. right? So if you have self-hatred or you don't have any self-worth, then you're just with somebody to be with somebody,
mm-hmm.
right? You're not with somebody and truly love them, because you can't. If you cannot love yourself as an individual,
mm-hmm.
you can't really love somebody else. Now, it doesn't mean you could say, oh, I love you, and you may have true feelings for that person. But once you start giving all your love to somebody else but not to yourself, what happens if that person leaves,
mm-hmm.
right? You get more hateful. You get more angry. You get, and that starts to build up more inside. And you blame yourself.
Which goes back to happiness. I mean, you can't, money won't make you happy. Relationships won't make you happy, right? A job won't make you happy. None of these external things are actually going to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness does come from within you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, we were kind of talking about that too, is that, can you make me happy? Not really, because who knows what's going on within me? I could be frustrated, irritated. You could do everything possible to try and make me happy, but that's not something you have the ability to do or control to do. That's mm-hmm. going to come from me. And so that happiness, or going back to the, judging, right? The judgment of others should really have no premise. And what should be more important is your judgment of yourself.
Right.
I say this with the context of, how many people out there that are in recovery have hopped on an airplane and was like sitting alone and they're like, hey, I'll take a drink. Nobody's going to know, right?
Right.
Nobody will know. And that's what you're saying. You're saying that basically only the judgment of other people matter, not the judgment of myself. Because the worst person in the world is going to know.
Yourself.
You.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a picture for people that think that way. If anybody ever thinks that way, don't do whatever it is that they were planning on doing. But that's a sign right there that you really need to work on yourself.
Right, because then, at the end of the day, can you look in the mirror and say, I stuck with my integrity today, and not caring if anybody saw that I stuck with it,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the same as, giving to somebody without anybody seeing it, without getting their approval, giving a homeless person money or giving them food or something like that And if nobody's around, you don't give it to them.
Right.
Only because you want other people to be like, oh, what a nice person. They gave this homeless person food or money.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what they call, like in recovery, they call that random acts of kindness.
Right.
Where you go do something nice for somebody without anybody knowing.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. But I wanted to go touch back a little bit on what you were saying about, you know, can I make you happy? As an individual, I can do my best and try to make you happy. I know you had a bad day and I want to try to make you happy. When you work so hard on trying to make somebody else happy and you can't make them happy, just for whatever situation there, you as a person are giving that other person the power over you, right? If they're not happy, then I can't be happy,
right?
And so the more that you're trying so hard to make them happy and they're just not happy, maybe they just had a really crappy day at work. I don't want to talk. I want to be left alone, blah, blah, blah. And you just keep pushing and pushing and pushing to try to make them happy. You're going to feel like a failure. I couldn't make him happy. It's not your responsibility to make that other person happy.
Or ability.
Or ability, right?
Yeah, you don't have that ability.
Right. So I could be there for you if you want to talk about it. You know, I'm here whenever. If you just want to be left alone, I'm going to leave you alone. You know, that might make them more happier than you trying to, what's the matter? What's the matter? What's going on? Why are you not happy? You know, whatever. Let me help you. You know, if you keep being that pushy person and they keep rejecting you, you're going to feel rejected and therefore not be happy yourself.
Absolutely.
So you're giving them that control. So those are some of the things that, as you're in a relationship, or not even in a relationship, but with your kids or your parents, or, you know, so the different types of relationships that you have, it is not your responsibility to make them happy. Mm-hmm. Are you happy with them? Yeah, we have a good time. We have fun, you know, whatever. Genuinely, even when tough times get tough, we're content, we're happy, you know, whatever. But it's not always going to be about happiness. Sometimes you need to give that other person that space, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be able to go, all right, there's nothing I can do here. I'm going to give him or her what they're asking.
Yes. Which is also a good thing with enjoying solitude.
Right.
Right. That's actually another premise of the self-actualizing person, you know, is the enjoying the solitude, the enjoying of the ability to be by yourself. And I tell clients this all the time that, you know, the moment that you're able to sit still, be alone and be okay with it, you're well on your way.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I remember being, when I was younger, teenage years and even into my early 20s, I hated being alone. I didn't like being with my own thoughts. I just felt uncomfortable being alone. Mm-hmm. Now when I'm alone in the house, it feels okay. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're at work, Brian's at school, you know, I'm working, I'm just plugging away, I've got a podcast on, or I'm listening to music or whatever. It allows me to kind of just, I don't have to worry about anything mm-hmm. right now, you know. So that is another thing that has changed as I've gotten older and a little more mature. But it does take some time to really be okay with your own thoughts and your own beliefs. And hey, if you're by yourself, you can also take that time to do some positive affirmations. And not have to worry what anybody's thinking, right? Mm-hmm. You could be loud and be like, I'm awesome.
Yep.
Screaming around the house, running around naked, whatever you want to do to make yourself have this positive affirmation, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it's, you know, like enjoying the solitude. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't also enjoy being with other people. Say something, and I don't know if, so I'd done a podcast recently with David Sperling on High Wall Clean on my other podcast. He was the filmmaker for Drunk in Public. This one actually will be coming out this week. And I was really thinking about something, and if David Sperling's listening at all on this, I wanted to throw this your way, because, so the story behind it, you know, he did 18 years. He followed this guy, Mark David Allen, who was a serious alcoholic,
yeah.
Like serious, serious alcoholic. And they did everything they could to try to get this guy help, right? Mm-hmm. And usually every time he went to jail, he was arrested for drunk in public over 500 times,
yeah.
Over those 18 years. And numerous times he'd go into jail. Of course, he'd go through DTs, withdrawal, drop into seizures. You know, he'd end up in the hospital, massive head injuries over his life. And And there was almost like no hope for this guy, right? And then he ends up, they get him into a rehab. He completes the rehab, or doesn't actually complete it, but he stays for a while, longer than he ever had, and he had the longest time he'd have sober ever. But
it was like 115 days or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then he leaves against their advice, but he leaves, ends up back in Newport Beach where, you know, he was at. And I remember David on the thing when we were doing the podcast, he was saying that the interesting thing was he said it showed something about treatment, right? Because even though he did return to drinking, drank a lot less, and he also got arrested a lot less, mm-hmm. right? He felt there was something to it. David, if you're listening, I was thinking about this, and I think this sort of plays a little bit into this, but I believe that because he had connections, all of a sudden he had people going to the beach because of the movie, right?
Right?
He was almost famous, right, because of this movie, where people would go to the beach to meet him. The social aspects of this, and I think this was really a big part to this. You know, you got a real drunk by himself all the time, all alone, you know, just drinking enormous amounts of alcohol. But then all of a sudden it changed for him. And I think it was, and the movie, I think, had a huge impact on it because, again, you had people from rehabs that were like, I want to go see this guy. You know, they'd go find him down on the beach.
And they let him in rehab free.
And talk to him, yeah. But he was, you know, this time he was drinking, though, at the very end.
But
he was, you know, he was talking to people. Mm-hmm. He was interacting with people.
He was, yeah, I remember.
You know, and then he did pass away, but he was sober.
Right.
You know,
he was sober when he passed away.
He was in no alcohol in his system. And I think that was something to that. I really do. I think there's, you know, so people that are in recovery, you know, that's why it's so important to have connections.
A social network.
A network of people, you know, to have people, to have some kind of purpose. And I think that was another thing with Mark. I think that he all of a sudden felt like, oh, maybe I got like a purpose,
mm-hmm.
you know, something, I'm doing something. I love what he says in that, you know, he's like, I'm helping people, you
right.
know. And so if anybody has never seen the video Drunk in Public, you guys should definitely check it out. It's a powerful video.
I just saw it this weekend with Eric, and I was like depressed for like 2 days. I felt so sad, not really depressed, but like I felt really kind of emotional because you fall in love with Mark.
Yeah.
Genuinely a sweet guy who just couldn't get out of his own way.
Yeah.
And only saw alcohol as his... He, you know, and he really wanted to. I think he, all the times that he said he wanted to get clean and sober,
I think he
really truly believed it, but he didn't, he just couldn't get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dave, the Sperling,
yeah.
you know, such an inspiration because all you hear is about, you know, bad cops, you know, cops don't care about people, whatever. And this police officer genuinely cared about this individual, and apparently other individuals too, just didn't make it documentary out of it.
Yeah.
But just it's a beautiful story. It's sad, but it's reality, mm-hmm. you know. And just I shouted out, I really think you should watch it just to know that you know, there is still good cops out there, number one, and number two, that things can always get a little worse, you know, before they get better.
And there's always hope until you're dead.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, you know, I mean, and that's what I tell people all the time, is the reality being is that, you know, there is always hope, you know, no matter where you've been or what you've done, you can do anything you want if you're willing to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, you know, I truly, truly believe that, you know, our, friend Spencer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spencer is, going to be getting out of prison. He's been in about 8 years. He's going to actually move in with us,
mm-hmm.
so we can kind of help him get back on his feet a little bit. Amazing guy. And I know he believes that, you know, because I've seen that. I mean, he did it before, you
mm-hmm.
know. No matter where you've been or what you've done, you can do anything you want if you're willing to fight for it, but you got to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's not always easy.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, and I think that people fight to get, like we talked about, get to a destination, you know, you have this journey, you get to the destination, and they get there, and then they lose track of what it took to get there, or they forget to set new goals for themselves to continue to stay motivated,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. Those kind of things. What's the next thing?
If anybody wants to give us a call, we want to always know what you were thinking. The phone number here is 323 323-0815. Again, 323-203-0815.
Thanks. And before I forget, I want to shout out to my girl Kat. Happy birthday. She's one of the coaches at where I work out. She's amazing.
Happy birthday.
She's loved our show so far, so I told her I was going to shout her out today.
Good, good. Should we sing happy birthday?
No. Okay. I've heard you sing. I want her to have a happy birthday. I don't want her to have to deal with that. Anyway, so enjoying solitude and privacy, you know, making sure that you enjoy being with yourself, right? Because if you could enjoy being with yourself, then you could definitely enjoy being with other people.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. But you need that too. And that's the whole thing.
No, absolutely.
That's kind of the premise, is that the alone time, you know, I teach on balance too.
Right, balance.
You know, balanced living. You know, anytime that we typically feel overwhelmed in life, it's usually a result of our life being out of balance somewhere.
Right.
And so, you know, I teach it kind of in this, you know, circle, you know, six quadrant kind of things, all of equal size, not the same amount of time you spend in each, but, you know, you got the self-growth, spirituality part, you know, family and friends, quiet relaxation time, your physical need, you know, physical health, so diet, whatever, you know, kind of thing. I'm not very good at that. exercise, not so good at that either. Your financial needs, right? And then the one area that everybody thinks that they have to leave out, fun and pleasure.
Right.
Don't give it up. Keep getting high. Do it clean, though.
Right, right. Absolutely. And I think that's what happens, right? We get so mundane with our day-to-day life that we forget we're allowed to still have fun. Just because we're adults and have bills to pay doesn't mean we don't get a little bit of time to enjoy ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Eric and I have gotten into that rut before. You know, we at least try once a month to have a date night, you know, and when we haven't, because life has gotten too busy or we don't have enough money or whatever the case may be, we start to get kind of a little more irritated with each other, or a little bit more annoyed, or just, you know, and so there's that, we're losing that balance.
I hate her. No, I'm just kidding.
we lose that balance. So it's just one of those things that, you know, we want to make sure that you're kind of checking yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. When you start to get a little overwhelmed or stressed or anxiety ridden, what is it that you're lacking in your life that you need to just take a day off, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Oh, look, I just got like 300 steps from talking with my hands. Mm. So it's pretty cool.
Good exercise.
So yeah, the next thing was, you know, having a philosophical sense of humor.
We talked about that last week.
We talked about that last week.
Laughing at yourself.
Laughing at yourself. Yep. Really important. Good therapy. Right?
Absolutely.
It's probably, you know, one of the hardest thing to do is laugh at yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if you take yourself too seriously, then something is out of balance.
Right. And spontaneity.
Spontaneity.
Right. Spontaneity. Being spontaneous sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Not being so rigid.
Right.
Being flexible.
Right.
You know, and that's another thing that sort of transpired in my life was, you know, I'm very easygoing. You know, I don't get, I kind of go with the flow pretty easily. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's made it, you know, I kind of always think about this with even recovery, you know, part of what I want to do is I just want to make life easier.
Right.
You know,
right.
Make life easier. Right. I'm going to go hang out in crack houses, right? That makes it harder. You know, it's just, I don't like crack, but you know.
Yeah, spontaneity is important. It's also making sure that, hey, you know, when there's times where I'm like, you know what, let's go get dinner. I don't want to cook. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a little spontaneous moment there. We go figure out something to eat. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be anything expensive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be any, you know, but just like do something, you know, go jump in the pool with your clothes on.
If we had one.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying, you know, like just do something.
Neighbor's
spontaneous.
Pool. Yeah.
Neighbor's pool. Maybe you probably want to get permission first. We don't want to get that spontaneous and breaking and entering.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but you know, things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I really think, like, you know, as we've kind of been talking, you know, the thing that really always comes back to and it sticks out to me, you know, is again that belief system. You know, the belief system that you carry. Is it helping? Is it harmful? Mm-hmm. You know, is it going to help you achieve the goals that you're looking for, to achieve in your life? You know, we talk about in the recovery world too, you know, that we, you know, you live for today, one day at a time, but a lot of people use that as an excuse
right.
to never look any further forward.
Right.
You know, and so that's where we have to really, you know, we live in the moment. Some, you know, today's the only moment we can enjoy. This moment right here and right now is all the moment we can enjoy right now. And then right now and right now. I can't enjoy the past and I can't enjoy the future. All we have is right now.
Right.
And right now.
Right. Right. But yeah, I mean.
But you have to look in the future.
You have to look. I mean, even when you're driving, you got to look at least 5 seconds ahead, right? Is it 5:25? Something like that. I don't remember. The DMV.
I'm usually getting on my phone. No, I'm just kidding.
Be spontaneous. Look up the DMV, you know, and tell you how many seconds you have to look in front of it. But, you know, you always have to look a little bit ahead.
Yes.
Plan a little bit ahead, right?
Well, you'll never achieve anything.
Well, exactly. You know? If you're only living for this moment right mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. then the right now is always going to be the same thing over and over and over again. You're never going to plan for that vacation. You're never going to plan, you know, so there's planning that needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I ask clients, so, you know, so like, what do you want to do in life? What are your goals? You know, I don't know. I'm just living for today, you know, or the other one God'll figure it out. You know, what is that saying? Let go and let God. Right. Mm-hmm. You hear that one all the time too. And these are just kind of excuses for people not to.
Well, yeah, you can let go and let God, but you still got to be like, Eric, God. What's the plan for next week? Let's do this. You know, like there's still.
Did you just call me God?
No, heck no.
What did you say?
Never. No, I'm.
Did you say like Eric and God or something?
No, I'm. No, get out of your high horse. Step it down a bit. What I'm saying is, you need, if you're going to use that saying, let go and let God.
Right.
You need to have that relationship with God and say, hey, God, what are we doing next week? What are, you know, what, God, tell me what plans I need to make because this is what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But everything in the Bible, too, if you're going like the biblical aspect, you know, there's all kinds of stuff in there that, you know, God's not going to give you what you can get for yourself.
Absolutely.
You know,
right?
So you've got to do it. You've got to push. You can't just sit there and hope and wish and, you know, wait for the miracle. You know, I'm just going to sit here and it's all going to come at me. I'm going to win the lottery.
Right.
Still working on that one. I got to play.
You
got
to play the lottery to actually win it.
I think so.
That's what I heard anyway. You know, but yeah, I mean, again, that's just another reason, like you said, another reason to just give that to somebody to do for you. Mm-hmm. You got to work to it. Like you said, if you want something, you work at it and you work your butt off.
And you got to fight.
And you got to be okay with doors slamming in your face. Right? You got to be okay with them saying no, like you did with them, you know, rejecting your clearance, right?
Yeah, when you live, and it's kind of the defining thing, you know, they talk about living purposefully, right? So I live with purpose, you know. So like I set goals, I set dreams, but just and then I figure out, okay, this is how I'm going to get there. Right. Mm-hmm. I can say, okay, here's how I'm going to do it. But where people fail is they don't look at feedback,
right.
You know? So like if I'm moving forward in life and I have this goal, I have this plan to do it, you know, these are my steps I'm going to take. Nothing works perfectly. And so I hit a wall.
Right.
Right. So many people, they try to keep going through the wall. And then they get pissed off and they just give up.
And they forget
that
you can climb over.
Yeah, or you can go around it, maybe.
Or you can go around it.
Maybe there's a door.
Maybe.
Down the, you know.
Some secret passage or something. I mean, there's ways around it.
Yeah. And that's where people fail because, you know, you have to look for feedback. Am I failing? Am I succeeding? You know, do I need to reevaluate my goals? Do I need to reevaluate my tactics?
Right.
You know, how am I going to do this? And that's how we achieve things in life. I mean, that's, you know, and I mean, it was. Yeah, that program I had in Anaheim was the epitome of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hit, and just the getting in the jail was only one example of, of the roadblocks that I hit, you know. I hit so many, you know, and but I didn't give up.
But persistence was the key, absolutely.
Yeah, and I kept working at it and kept working at it and kept working at it and kept fighting and fighting and fighting, not physically, but it's not, you know, fight with the cops, but, you know, but I, you know, I kept pushing and I didn't give up. And eventually I found the right door.
Right.
You know, and that's, and then that's the premise of it, you know. What's the saying, you know, Edison, you know, had to create the light bulb and he failed, you know, he found 1,000 ways that didn't work before he found how it did.
Right, exactly. And that's how we know, and I tell everybody the story about, you know, the car accident that I was in when I was 21. And I was told, you're never going to walk again. Your leg's destroyed.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. We are out of time.
Oh, wow. Wait, what?
Yeah. So, anyways, hours go quick here.
Yeah,
50 minutes go very quick here.
Apparently.
And want to mention really quick, next week, we are actually going to have Jeremy Jackson that's going to be out here. If anybody knows, he is
Hobie.
On he was the female heartthrob of Baywatch, the
back
teenager, grew up on the show. He's going to be out here with us next week. So look forward to it. Thank you, honey, for doing this show with me.
Absolutely.
As my co-host. Thank you, everybody, for listening to What Were You Thinking? And we'll see you next week. Man.
You're listening to What Were You Thinking? With Eric McCoy and Morella McCoy. Only on LA Talk Radio.